Hello, and you are listening to Eco Justice Radio from the KPFK Los Angeles studio. A project of SoCal 350 Climate Action, our show presents environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame featuring voices not necessarily heard on traditional, mainstream, or even public media outlets. I am your host, Jessica Aldridge, and today's episode is called Connecting Waste and Climate Change. Our guest is Leslie Lukash, the executive director of Zero Waste Sonoma, formerly known as Sonoma County Waste Management Agency. Leslie has worked over 20 years in the solid waste and resource management industry. Prior to her current appointment, she was the director of Zero Waste for SCS Engineers, a solid waste recycling and organics management consulting firm, for 13 years, and owned a private consulting company for 7. She has spent her career designing and implementing comprehensive sustainability and zero waste programs for large institutions, public agencies, venues, and events throughout California and the nation. Leslie serves on the board of directors for the National Recycling Coalition and Zero Waste International Alliance. There are varying definitions of zero waste and confusion as to when it started being utilized in city and business plans. There are concerns around feasibility and if it's equitable in its availability as a practice in daily life. As someone who has been in the industry for almost 15 years myself, I understand the confusion and share in the concerns. I look to my mentors, who were some of the original waste geeks that were pushing a new way of looking at recycling and resource management under the guise of zero waste. Although the concept of zero waste is ancestral by nature, it reflects indigenous practices and is embedded in the production of all resources. The movement as we know it today got its start in Berkeley, California in the 1980s and in Australia in the 1990s. By 2004, those originators created the first and still the only peer-reviewed, internationally accepted definition. By this definition, zero waste means the conservation of all resources by means of responsible production, consumption, reuse, and recovery of products, packaging, and materials without burning and no discharges to land, water, or air that threaten the environment or human health. I also elevate this definition that no discharges to land, water, or air that threaten the environment or human health must be taken into consideration at the point of extraction and refinement of resources prior to any type of disposal. And in our Eco Justice Radio 7-part series on the plastic plague, we follow the connection and solutions from extraction to disposal. So be sure to check that out. From the time a resource is extracted and managed for product creation and consumption to the time it is consumed, disposed, and then managed for extended use or burial, there are climate-disrupting effects and potentials for climate-loving solutions. How we create product, or what can be defined as soon-to-be-wasted resources, and then how we manage said resources at end of life has a cumulative impact on climate change. For example, many people have no idea that wasted food and plant matter make up the largest amount of material in our landfill. And when it decomposes, it creates the third largest source of man-made methane gas in the country, second in California. But those organics can be captured and then used to create carbon sequestrating solutions to help in the mitigation of environmental impacts while helping to stabilize the global climate crisis. On today's episode, Connecting Waste and Climate Change, we will dive into the issues and share solutions. Our guest today is longtime friend and sister in waste. She is also the co-chair of the National Zero Waste Conference, and it is my honor to welcome to the show, joining us via phone, Leslie Lukash, Executive Director of Zero Waste Sonoma. Welcome to Eco Justice Radio.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Yes. So, Leslie, you have been working in the overall waste sector for quite a long time, over 20 years. And I've had the pleasure of knowing you since I got my start about 15 years ago. And I can say we definitely have been preaching this zero waste gospel before it was cool outside of our, you know, small waste geek circle. And way before Instagram and pictures of jars were a thing. What drew you into this industry?
Well, when I was in college, I had the opportunity to go study abroad in Kenya for the summer. And I visited, you know, many different villages along the way, and I just was, it really took me back because I realized, you know, how much Americans really produce in waste and all the stuff that we use. Then when I got back to school, I took a class in waste management, and the subject really called to me. And so after I graduated, my first job was for the city of LA, setting up their special events recycling program. And from there, I worked at the LA Convention Center, setting up their recycling program. And I did the same thing for the LA Zoo. And I quickly realized that we can't recycle ourselves out of this wasting problem. You know, that's just like running on a treadmill, that there has to be something more than just continually producing products for us to recycle. And that's when reuse and reduce really kicked into me, that that needs to be the focus, that we really have to minimize our consumption, our packaging, so that we don't have to recycle it in the first place. So that led me to zero waste and the zero waste principles, and I really stand by them as, you know, a main way to solving, one of the main ways to solving our climate challenge.
And waste issues and zero waste as a solution is oftentimes, more so historically, left off of the agenda or not a central focus on a broader conversation regarding sustainability, green city plans, so-called green solution-oriented things. It's even environmental justice campaigns. And only recently have we seen an uptick in interest around waste issues. And maybe that's due to social media and like shocking videos with plastic stuck inside animals. However, the conversation still focuses more so on the downstream responsibilities and realities, what consumers can do and what they're doing wrong, what to buy or not buy, or campaigns centered around cleanups and anti-littering campaigns. But there's just so much more regarding waste and the associated environmental and social issues that happen along the way before an object is used and disposed of by the consumer. For our listeners, can you walk through where that cycle starts? Because this isn't linear and it's not just about disposal.
Yeah, you are absolutely right. The cycle of waste actually starts at the moment that you're extracting resources to make and produce our stuff. When I do presentations, I use the example of the production of aluminum can that's sold in England. And this is, you know, somebody did this life cycle analysis, and they followed the point at which bauxite is extracted from the earth and transported to Norway and Sweden, where they use hydroelectric energy to create that bauxite into what's called aluminum ore. The aluminum ore is then, you know, transported to other factories where they actually make the aluminum sheets. Once they make the aluminum sheets, those sheets finally get transported to England, where they go to a factory where they're going to manufacture the cans. And so the can is there without the lid on. Now they have to get the ingredients from, you know, all over the world as well to actually fill up that can with a sugary, you know, liquid that's not really great for our diet. And eventually they, you know, seal the top of the can onto the lid onto the can, and then they have to put those cans in boxes, put those boxes within boxes, and distribute those boxes all over England so that they can actually sell these cans and get them from distribution centers to our grocery stores. So that is a huge footprint just to create a can that we may only use one time for 3 minutes, let's say, and then, you know, we hope it gets recycled at the end. So there's just a lot of waste that is produced along that whole cycle of producing the products that we use.
And a lot of impacts along that cycle, too. The United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC report that was commissioned in 2016, said that we have 12 years at that time to limit climate change catastrophe by keeping global temperatures to a maximum of 1.5 degrees Celsius, beyond which even a half a degree will significantly worsen things like drought and floods and extreme heat and poverty for hundreds of millions of people. How can a focused shift on waste and implementing zero waste solutions become one of the most impactful things that we can do towards minimizing the climate crisis?
Well, believe it or not, zero waste is actually one of the quickest and easiest and most effective first steps that the community can do to reduce their greenhouse gases. We hear a lot about circular economy coming out of countries like Europe, where they truly recognize that when you respect the whole process of the material and the as a resource and not something that's going to be discarded, and you continually use that resource to stimulate that circular economy, we can really, you know, minimize the amount of greenhouse gases that we are producing. Not only that, you know, by getting organics out of the landfill and putting, you know, making that organics into compost, putting that compost on soil in a really healthy soil amendment, which fosters a carbon sequestration. So not only can we reduce those emissions, but actually lock that carbon back into the soil where it started.
Yeah, talking about that methane I mentioned previously, that connection between man-made methane and waste, let's dive further into that. First, how is methane a powerful short-term greenhouse gas? And also expand on how our waste is directly connected to one of the largest emitters of man-made methane.
Just so everybody's clear, when we talk about organic matter, you know, we're talking about food waste or food scraps, you know, yard waste, food soiled paper. All these things are organic in nature. And when you throw them in the garbage and, you know, and it gets sent to the landfill, that material sits in what we call it decomposes anaerobically, which means it decomposes without oxygen. And through that process of decomposition, methane is created. So methane is a greenhouse gas that's 72 times more potent to the environment than just CO2 is, or carbon is, over the 20-year period. So that is a huge impact of greenhouse gases that are emitted through methane in landfills. So much so that the state of California introduced legislation called Senate Bill 1383. And this is a bill that's a climate initiative, not a organic management initiative per se. But what this bill stated is that we need to reduce the amount of organic materials going to our landfills by 75% by the year 2025. And
in doing so, we would reduce
methane being produced in California.
Yeah. And that material, when it, you know, they had a piece of legislation called AB 1826 previously that targeted the reduction of organics to landfill. And then they passed SB 1383, Senate Bill 1383, and increased the ability to get at those organics because of their decomposition. And they, when we get back from the break in a moment, I want you to talk about why that is with AB 32.
Great.
If you are just tuning in, you are listening to EcoJustice Radio on KPFK Los Angeles. We are speaking with Leslie Lukash, Executive Director of Zero Waste Sonoma, discussing connecting waste and climate change. So, Leslie, we were just talking about two pieces of legislation in the state of California that focus on organics, removing organics from the landfill, given the fact that in the state of California, when organics, food matter, putrescibles, when they break down the landfill, they create the second largest source of man-made methane. And I mentioned there's another piece of legislation that came out way before that called AB 32, which is a climate change piece of legislation. I just wanted to see if you could briefly connect how that piece of legislation on climate is sort of the mother of these other pieces of legislation.
Yes, for us, it's super exciting that California did this with AB 32, which is called the California Global Warming Solutions Act. And what the legislation stated is that California needed to reduce its greenhouse gases and reduce emissions to the 1990 levels by the year 2020. We are not there yet, but what has happened is because of this legislation, it brought a lot of focus from many different industries within California, like our Air Resources Board, energy, waste, to all work together and create legislation to support AB 32. So when I mentioned SB 1383 and getting organics out of landfill, it is because we have what we call a scoping plan and a focus to really reduce our greenhouse gases.
And then there are the carbon emissions, right? The CO2, we talked about that the methane can even be worse. How can carbon emissions be reduced through zero waste, and why does carbon differ from methane?
So when you talk about carbon emissions, what comes to my mind is consumption emissions. I gave the example of the aluminum can and all the transportation that occurred and the manufacturing. You know, that's our consumption emissions. It's not just when we get the item and get rid of it. It's everything that happened before it. So we have a huge opportunity if we look at the materials that we're using in a different way to reduce those consumption emissions, those carbon emissions. And there's a lot of different opportunities as just an individual of how you can do that. You know, reuse is the best way. For example, clean canteens or, you know, items like that. It's very common now to see people having, you know, carrying water with them and not, you know, just going right to the single-use plastic water bottle. So, you know, through reuse and through, you know, respecting the resources that we are using, the stuff that we're using, recycling it, composting it, you know, those are all ways that we can reduce our carbon emissions.
And, you know, some of us aren't always able to participate in the same way that other people are. Some people don't have access to clean water. Some people don't have the funds to be able to participate in reuse in the same way. And so there is, you know, and we all experienced forced consumption through limited choices, given the type of product that the businesses say, hey, well, you all have to have a cell phone, so this is how we're going to deliver it to you. Or you know, maybe the food that you're using, it comes packaged before it even gets to us. So sometimes we're buying in bulk, but the packaging of that product, there's so much packaging and waste that happens upstream before we even see it. Another carbon emission reduction through zero waste that I know that you work on and that you're very passionate about is carbon sequestration. When we talk about pulling the organic, the putrescible matter out of the land, make sure it's not in the landfill, but then what do we do with it? And what is carbon sequestration? And why is this really great for, you know, a carbon solution?
Yes, because carbon sequestration, you know, relates to the carbon cycle, and we have a lot of science now behind carbon sequestration through compost. So when we get our organic matter out of the landfill, turn it into compost, and apply that compost to agricultural land, rangeland, we have figured out that that compost actually creates more soil bugs, I should say, you know, real, like, healthy soils underneath, and the microorganisms. And when the microorganisms are happy, the roots can grow down deeper into the soils. And, you know, when you have deeper root systems, you need more carbon from the atmosphere. So essentially, grasses and the plants become straws, and they're, you know, they draw in the carbon and they lock that carbon back into the soil where we want it to remain in the first place. So why I like carbon sequestration is because we're really getting the carbon out of the atmosphere versus some of the other things of reducing carbon, like, for example, you know, carpooling or taking public transportation. You know, those things all still produce carbon, but just less of it. Whereas carbon sequestration actually locks that carbon back in the soil. So I think this is a huge solution and opportunity for California. It's something that I'm working on in Sonoma County. We actually have a carbon sequestration working group, and we have demonstration projects already in the county where we can quantify how much carbon we are sequestering at, you know, either rangeland or agricultural land. And so we are doing some modeling and trying to figure out how to make the modeling scalable so that we can really be progressive and pass policy that, you know, supports and incentivizes sequestering carbon, you know, from the farmer or the, you know, range, you know, people who operate the rangeland, the agricultural industry. It's a huge opportunity for our state.
And it's a huge opportunity for nationally and globally as well.
Absolutely.
And I had mentioned it previously that zero waste on the communications regarding sustainability plans, and when we go to conferences and it's like, hey, this is a conference in regards to sustainability and environment and what we can do. And then you go and you're like, well, where's waste? And you're flipping through the program. Hopefully, a lot of the times I do have programs, but in our zero waste conferences, we do online. So why? Why is zero waste not included in these conversations and in most climate action plans?
I am seeing it more often, but you're absolutely right. You know, it's because most communities think about greenhouse gas emissions through industry. And that's how the dialogue has been, you know, transformed along the way. So we look at industry like transportation, energy, commercial industry, agriculture. And so they're kind of ingrained that that's how you look at greenhouse gas emissions. But in 2014, the EPA actually analyzed this, and they decided that there's a lot of connection between industry. So they decided to analyze greenhouse gas emissions through what's called a system-based approach. And that actually looked at the way we produce and consume and dispose of our goods and our food. And they concluded that this systems-based approach, actually 42% of our greenhouse gases is produced in our systems. And that directly ties into what was once called the waste management industry, which we now call the materials management industry. And we finally got to see that we need to focus on how we manage these materials and how these materials flow through our economy, how, you know, their impacts of extraction and how we deliver these products and stuff to us, and how we use it, and then the end of life and disposal of it. You know, it's pretty amazing that that whole system is 42% of greenhouse gas production, and that system is what the waste management, zero waste materials management industry is about.
Yeah, I mean, because, yeah, there's transportation, but what are you transporting? You know, and I think that's, I love to see that, you know, how we're talking about that breakdown, because we can be so general with it to say, oh, our greenhouse gas emissions come from production facilities and they come from transportation. But just asking that next question of, well, what are you transporting? What are you producing? Why is that facility, what's the purpose of that facility? And then it's all tied back, not always, but a big portion, as you said, is tied back into consumptive habits, consumptive realities, and that is tied to that resource management. Now, looking at the downstream of all of this, the waste industry, the ones that come and collect those materials, or are managing it, or out there doing the outreach, how can the waste industry lead on climate change? Some may argue that it would be antithetical for a corporation meant for hauling and charging for wasted resources to want to actually reduce waste.
Well, I think the waste industry needs to realize that consumers are changing their habits. We are seeing consumers be more aware of their wasting footprint. We are because of that, we are seeing corporations now with campaigns to, you know, lightweight their products, which, you know, creates less waste, still creating a product, but it's, you know, the product's actually lighter, so you're, you know, producing less packaging. You know, as consumers, we're seeing more campaigns around reducing single-use plastic. Communities are well aware, especially in California, of the impacts of plastics escaping into our environment, into our waterways, and out to our oceans. So we're seeing this cultural shift in my mind of the population wanting to waste less. And so the waste industry, I see them, they should react to that. And I have seen actually many leaders in the waste management industry promote reuse, recycling, and zero waste, and actually invest in better recycling systems and better composting systems, because they see that that's the future, that wasting is not the way to go, that consumers really want to recycle more and have access to recycling. and as well as, you know, composting and you know, the materials that, that go in there and what they do with that compost afterwards. So to me, it's actually a really positive time to see this consumer awareness shift and seeing the waste management industry respond to that.
Yeah, and you talk about single-use disposable plastics. This material, for the most part, the waste industry doesn't want anyway. So unless if that waste company, that waste hauling, there's many different types of positions in the waste industry, but if they're hauling that material and they're collecting and having dispose of it, it's more in their favor to haul away and process for recycling or composting material that they can actually utilize. And if they're getting material that they can't utilize and that's going to landfill and they don't own or operate landfills, then that's, you know, that's a charge to them. And so,
one thing I want to add to that is, you know, Sonoma County, we have a landfill. And when I talk about zero waste, I tell people, hey, the landfill, that is our asset. We want to make our landfill last as long as possible, and that's a resource to us. So it's in everybody's interest to waste less and recycle more so that we can extend the life of the landfill as long as possible.
What if someone came to you and said, what can I do to help make a significant impact relative to zero waste and an impact in regards to the climate crisis? What would your advice be?
Oh, that's an easy one. There's so many things that you could do. And I could just start with think globally, act locally, starting with your own shopping habits, creating, you know, carrying canteens with you. You know, like for me in my purse, I have my canteen. I have a utensil set. I have to-go-ware if I'm going to be going out to eat, so I don't have to get the single-use packaging of the to-go-ware. Another thing that people can do is, you know, put pressure on your local elected officials to pass progressive, you know, waste management ordinances, like ones that we see with banning styrofoam. Now we're seeing ordinances that ban single-use plastics. Or put pressure for your own community to pass a zero waste resolution. Those are things that we've done in Sonoma County, and we have seen a lot of progress. So much so that the agency I represent, you know, it used to be called the Sonoma County Waste Management Agency, and we made a decision to change our name to Zero Waste Sonoma because that is more in line with what the community wants.
Yeah. The first ever National Zero Waste Conference takes place in March 2020 during what's called Zero Waste Week, and this is up in Berkeley. You happen to be the co-chair of that conference. Why is this gathering so significant compared to other waste events, and what is the long-term goal?
So this event is significant because we are bringing together the leaders of the nation, and actually globally, we have some speakers coming from around the world to spend 2 days together to share information, talk about progressive programs, look to the future of how we can integrate zero waste policies and programs into our society. So I am super excited for this opportunity. If anybody can make it, it's March 18th and 19th at UC Berkeley. And I guarantee you will be fulfilled with amazing content that is, you know, that will impact our environment and help reduce, you know, our greenhouse gases and really foster climate action.
And many leaders from the zero waste movement are sort of originators as well that you may not know of. Leslie and I, you know, we know of these people, but because we've been in this, we've been taught by them. I've been taught by Leslie, they're not social media icons, but they've been leading on this conversation. So it's an opportunity to see that world and take part in that world. Does the conference have any plans to continue every single year?
We hope so. After we are done with this conference, we are going to gather our thoughts and debrief, and we will figure out what to do with the amazing energy that's going to be generated at this event.
And where can people get more information on the event?
Please visit Zero Waste, or I should say ZWConference.org, and you can find a list of the speakers and more information about the program and content. And we really hope that people can join us because it's going to be a great opportunity.
Do you have any other useful resources or websites that you would recommend if people want to also find out like what you've been up to?
Sure. Check out us at zerowastesonoma.gov, and you will find out a lot of the great programming that we are doing towards zero waste in the Sonoma County area of the state.
Thank you, Leslie.
Great. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. And thank you to our guest, Leslie Lukash, Executive Director of Zero Waste Sonoma, discussing connecting waste and climate change. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. Also, be sure to check out our 7-part series, The Plastic Plague. Visit us on social media, EcoJustice Radio, SoCal350, and Adventures in Waste. If you like what you heard and you want others to be informed, subscribe to our podcast, share the episodes, make a comment. You have been listening to EcoJustice Radio, recorded at KPFK Los Angeles, a project of SoCal 350. The show can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and at ecojusticeradio.org. Created by Mark and JP Morse, executive producer Jack Eit, engineer Blake Lampkin, interview hosted by Jessica Aldridge, myself from Adventures in Waste, and original music by Javier Cadre. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.